Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, June 27th, 2003. Today's session is entitled A Different Journey, Coming Out with Good Courage, a conversation on gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered issues, hosted by David Wee and Karen Herseth Wee, number WED 2003-10. Let's listen in.
Thank you all for coming this afternoon. It's hard to come inside on a day like this. Glad you're here. This is a session entitled A Different Journey, Coming Out with Good Courage. I'm David Wee from St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota.
I'm Karen Herseth Wee, who follows him wherever he goes.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I wonder if that's true.
And we'd like to have this be an occasion. Karen and I are hosting it rather than trying to lead it or direct which way we go. For us to talk with one another and to hear one another about any issues that you have regarding the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and Holden, or and your family, or and your local congregation, or and the church body to which you belong. Those of us who are members of the ELCA have received instructions from the presiding bishop, our pope, to talk about this in congregations and groups of our communities. Karen and I are parents of three children. Our youngest is a lesbian, Allison. She's 33 years old now, a Holden veteran. First came here when she was 10. Loves this place and spent a year and a half in the early 90s here as one of the lead cooks. And we've been here 20 or 30 times, and we're here most years, at least part of the time, as some of you folks are. We've always been grateful to Holden Village for the way that it has been a place of safety for our daughter and members of her community. Place of understanding and acceptance, and more than just tolerance, but embracing her for who she is. But we all live in and worship in communities where that's not always the case. And it's very hard for us as parents to see any situation where our daughter and her friends are not well received and taken in the same full unqualified terms as anyone else. And we suspect that some of you have either experienced that or seen it, and we'd like to talk about what we need to do, what has to be done as a culture and a church and a community.
One of the reasons that we're really happy to be here, and we are happy to be in any church context, adult forum conversation, is because we're so darn impatient for change. We aren't willing to just wait and wait while everybody has another study group or another 5 or 10 years before they begin to get their act together. As people study, other people's lives are going by. And some of you know this, but as it happens, our daughter, amongst all of her cousins, she sometimes laughs that when they were little kids, they used to talk about which one of them would most likely go into ministry, as everyone else in the family seemed to do. And she really always, when she was 5 and 6 and 8, she thought it was going to be her. She really admired her grandpa, and she admired her uncles, and she admired the women that those people married, and she wanted to go to seminary. But she also realized that she didn't want to spend her life alone, being lonely. So that little piece of paper that you're supposed to sign in the Lutheran Church as you graduate from seminary saying that you will be celibate the rest of your life, she knew she couldn't sign. So she has kind of bided her time for about 10 years figuring out what it will be that she's doing. And right now she's finishing a PhD in English at the University of Minnesota. And I think she's going to love what she does, and she's going to do it well, and that's going to be fine. But there are a lot of other folks her age that didn't have to spend all that time trying to figure it out. And it's another reason that we have a great impatience. I think if you have more than one child, one is gay, two are not, the injustices are right there before you all the time. Our Jonathan and Rebecca can come home and be married in their local congregation, and the community stands up in support and celebrates, and if Allison brings a partner home to be married in our local congregation, it wouldn't happen. We know we could have a great celebration for her, but that's not the context in which she grew up and where her love and loyalties are. So, anyway.
And this weekend, I mean, tomorrow is the 34th anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion or event in New York. And one of the major moments of the drive for equality for gay and lesbian people in this country. But this is the weekend that there are gay pride marches all over the country. And many of us would be in them if we weren't here, but we're having our own gay pride march tomorrow, for which we're grateful. So it's the perfect time for us to, any time would be good to talk about this, but especially this weekend. Would anyone like to put on the table a question or an issue or a concern, frustration, hope, especially hope, as we work toward diminishing this difference?
What do you do in the church back home? Make them talk about it, or
we try to make ourselves available, and it's great when Allison comes with us at adult forums, and we probably do one a month in churches all over. We were kind of recently at Central downtown Minneapolis.
A lot of them don't understand it.
Yeah.
You know, we've tackled it here for 20 years and we'll tackle it.
We're just working for the day when it's a non-issue.
Right.
You know.
But see, on churches that have you speak, they'll be polite, but does it change anything in their psyche or whatever you call it?
I don't know. You tell me. We've been at your church.
Well, I got changed here. But I get exasperated from all the talk, and it seems like they just reinforce wherever they're at.
Has anyone got a success story from a congregation where everyone finally said, enough of this, we're moving ahead?
I do.
Okay.
I'm sorry. My home, well, I guess my former home church now in Portland, Oregon, Central Lutheran, just voted to become a reconciling church, which is a public statement of welcome to gay and lesbian people. And it was a long road, a very long road, a lot of dissent. I, as an out lesbian, spoke to the adult forum. When I was closeted, I've been a very active member in the church. And so I'd like to think that had something to do with it. But I would really give credit to the parents who, one particular family who is a mother and father of a lesbian child, very prominent family in the community, made their case, and they made it strongly, and they didn't give up. The amount of courage that they had and their persistence really should be honored. And it is, I think, particularly important that it was parents, straight folk, who did it, because there's only so many times that I can stand up in front of a church and take that risk, because the daggers that people throw, they're personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I can take that for a while, but after, you know, I can't keep that shield up. So as much as straight people can speak out, I think that's real helpful.
We began to realize that in our educational journey. One day we were going off to talk to some group, I think it was a counseling group in St. Paul, but Allison wanted some music left off, and so we just met her outside of her apartment and handed this music out the window. She looked at us and said, I'm so glad you're going to do this stuff, and I'm just worn out and not wanting to do it anymore. And, you know, the emotional load that the that the GLBT community carries is big enough. You know, I agree. I think it's when the rest of us speak up.
I have the privilege of serving as pastor at St. Matthew's Church in Jersey City, New Jersey. We were a congregation in a neighborhood in the shadow of the World Trade Center just across the Hudson from New York City. And in that setting, by the time I came there in 1987, it was already a congregation that was very diverse in many ways, racially as well as representing the whole community, and a congregation that long before programs like Reconciled in Christ and some of the other initiatives within the Lutheran Church have been out there, had been very accepting of the gay and lesbian community in downtown Jersey City. They were the host site for Gay Friends and Neighbors, which was a social organization in the community. And they were a congregation served by officers who included Frieda Faltings, 82-year-old German Lutheran, Joe Brown, African-American, lower Manhattan computer programmer, and Roger Hostetler, living in a long-time gay partnership in our neighborhood as officers of the congregation and representatives of that diversity. The thing I would lift up as the proviso is that the reason that was so natural there was because of the tremendous diversity of both neighborhood and congregation. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the real barriers we find in the ELCA, and I'm guessing other denominations as well, is communities without diversity, that therefore have walls that are pretty well established against something that has embraced GLBT, you know, going through that whole experience of being able to be as welcoming as we say we are. I now serve a congregation in small town Michigan, where we have a couple of gay members who, not only in our congregation, but in our community, choose not to be out. They've confided in me, we've been on a journey together, but they would not be able to live in that very conservative corner of Southwest Michigan as well as they do now, they think. Yeah. And that's because of our tremendous deep-seated prejudgment as a community. Yeah.
Well, just to kind of expand on what Bob said, I think I'm a physician, and when I went to medical school in the 1960s, this was a pathological diagnosis. And even though during that time and after that time, I had patients who were gay, who had partners, and I always respected their relationships and everything, and who that they were. I didn't really know what this was all about until I came to Golden Village. And about 15 years ago, I had the rich opportunity to spend about 3 hours in the morning talk to a lesbian woman about all this. And the problem really is that everybody doesn't meet that chance. And what Bob said, we lack diversity in a lot of our places. Actually, the diversity is there. The bind that we're in is that they're afraid to come out. We have people in our congregation that I know about who are afraid to come out because of this personal attack business and the ostracism that goes with it. So it's even worse than the racial issue because they're there and we don't know them. They know they're there. And I just think that the only hope here is for people to get to know somebody personally. Mm-hmm. Or get some of the family that's going to be a person that would tell us happened to a friend or a relative. Just changes everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, the judgment of the Old Testament just goes right out the window.
The irony is that we all do know people who we don't know.
We don't know, and that's the bind. Mm-hmm. If we accepted them wholeheartedly, we get to know more of them.
Yeah.
But that's the obstacle. The diversity is actually there in our towns.
Okay.
Not necessarily in our congregation, so.
My church in El Paso, Texas, the pastor several years ago just declared we were going to be a Reconciled in Christ congregation. And no one quit, no one changed churches, everybody just, went along with it, and it wasn't a problem.
That has been my dream.
His last newsletter, he had a whole lot of people.
Yes.
In his last newsletter, his whole article was about his frustration with the Lutheran Church and how slowly they're getting around to it.
Yeah.
I have heard a few stories like that. You know, if there is not timidity and the leadership of the church is respected, and all of a sudden they just say, "This is the right thing to do."
Right.
Because one of the dilemmas, as you mentioned, if you go into the study, is that it's sort of the opposition also has to be represented, and things have to be equally talked about, and pretty soon
they
seem to have argument all the time. Yeah.
But isn't that the way the church works? I mean, come on. There's not... Okay. I'm frustrated because I can't go to seminary. But it would be ridiculous for me to act in ways which excluded my conservative family from the church, such as not being willing to talk to them, such as not being willing to have conversation where people might disagree with me. I mean, that's exactly what needs to happen. So the studies are important. Yeah, they're frustrating, but you know, I'm not the only important person in the church, and other gays and lesbians are not the only important people in the church. My uncle, a conservative theology professor, who may very well leave the ELCA if in 2005 things go as it looks like they might, you know, he's an important part of the church too. And you,
I agree, and it does create a huge dilemma. Yeah, Anne?
David's pointing at people here. Just wanted to tell you that our church is, first of all, we had a conference with the former presiding bishop, Herb Chilstrom, mm-hmm. and the bishop of the St. Paul Area Synod, mm-hmm. Lowell Erdahl, both retired now. And we had them there for a whole day, and it attracted well over 100 people, and it was great. And our second project may be of interest to some of you, and be in touch with me. We're producing a video. Because a lot of us have really been converted simply because we've met and loved people that are gay and seen the depth of their faith and the stability of their life. And so we're producing a video where we're interviewing people, gay people, sometimes parents, and so forth. And that's going to be ready in the fall. And it's all Lutherans. And we decided not to make it too ecumenical because we are targeting our own family first. Mm-hmm. So it's all Lutherans and probably all white folks by the time we get done with it. But we would love to share that and have that. And then you can get our address and, you know, for the cost of a copy.
Will you be able to get gay pastors also interviewed?
No.
Well, one of them that's interviewed is a gay pastor, but she's not out as a pastor because she's afraid that she's in a partnership, but she's a psychologist, so she's speaking on the psychological kind of things that people go through in the struggle. She actually is a gay pastor.
And one of them is a dear friend that I've just met in the last year, who was a Wisconsin Synod pastor, always knew he was gay, always knew he'd be single. Worked for 7 years in a small Wisconsin Synod church in North Dakota, met a man, fell in love, left his whole call, and had 7 or 8 years with this man, and then he was killed in a car accident with a partner. So now my friend has lost his vocation. He can't go back into the Wisconsin Synod. He's also lost the life that he left his vocation for.
Yeah.
So he's going to be in a...
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like we're playing the Roman Catholic game all over again. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's similar body there.
Yeah, I'm back.
Speaking of, we have this is not a statement, I think. We have a situation in our church which welcomes gay and lesbian and transgender people. We had our director of religious ed had run the most wonderful program of education for kids that I have ever seen. She had well over 500 kids on Sunday, you know, from kindergarten to high school. And she was given the award in the whole Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis. There were 18 people chosen, and she was one of them for outstanding catechist, I believe was the title. The Archbishop found out that she was lesbian, living with a partner with 4 biracial children. Just a wonderful woman, wonderful girl, and told her that she may not receive the award. So it was taken away from her.
I remember reading about that.
And well over 200 of us went out. We had a dinner at the award ceremony at a church in Edina. And over 200 of us went out there with just banners, and we did a silent vigil. We sang some hymns and just were present at that banquet. that she wasn't allowed to go to.
Yeah.
Sad story.
Mm-hmm. A word of hope. I come from a congregation in a town of about 70,000 people. One of the factors that I guess might make a difference, two that come to my mind are, number one, the youth of the congregation. When we began this process of study, whether we should become a Reconciling Christ congregation, the youth were outspoken. There was no question where they stood, and they let the adults know it's time. The second thing, even though we're in a town where there are several other Lutheran congregations, and that does make a difference, I acknowledge that, we did have a supportive pastor, and one of the things that he said at the church council meeting that I attended after our outreach committee brought this up for consideration, and he said very firmly that he was in favor of our studying this and becoming a Reconciling in Christ congregation. And he said, and by the way, I want all of you to know right now that we're going to lose members. He did not cut it short. And because he was so outspoken and plain-spoken about it, I think that helped the church council to recognize it's time for us to really begin to grapple with this. And if we lose some members, okay, we also are doing God's work. Mm-hmm. And those are two factors that I felt were important in our final decision to become a Reconciling in Christ congregation.
Mm-hmm. Is there a hand over here?
Well, are you familiar with the church in Minneapolis recently that just called a lesbian woman to be their pastor, and the synod, you know, didn't put their approval on it? I don't know all the details, but the congregation said, "Fooey with you, we want her anyway." And I'm wondering, how did they get to that point?
Well, there is a project called the Extraordinary Candidacy Project within the Lutheran Church, where candidates who have not been approved for ordination by the church are able to get support and get called by congregations who say, we want this person because we believe this person can preach the gospel to us and serve us well.
I'm just exercising my fingers.
Oh. No,
I was going to say that this large voice that the religious right has frustrates me so much, because I think that they cause this, what we consider hate, to just go on and on and on. And if they would probably just shut up, I think that it would help a lot.
But that does scare the people of our community, though. The voice of the religious right, with its clear biblical fundamentalism, is frightening in an age where a keystone to how we define community is something called family values. Family values, the right will say, are compromised by you churches who are daring to have this conversation. And that makes people in the pews very nervous, because we claim to be places that support family. That code language is very frightening, I think, for a lot of parishioners and mainline churches.
Right. And of course, others know that unconditional love is the most important family value.
Yes.
And it's just amazing that the term family values can be used.
It's ammunition.
It's ammunition.
Yeah.
I think as best we can, we need to try to co-opt that term, because that's actually what many of us have at heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can use it to, use it right back as well as we can and as much as we can.
We have to be opportunists and jump in there when the opportunity arrives. And too many people, they're thinking out logically what's going to happen if they open their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes... Say what's really on your heart.
Yeah. There's a hand.
Yeah. Well, I just last year kind of had a awakening experience. I had spent 3 years at the University of Chicago Divinity School, which is ecumenical, very intellectual. And there were gays and lesbians out everywhere, and it wasn't a big deal. I mean, it was just an accepting community. And then I went and did a Lutheran year at Luther Seminary. And I just realized that it's so important for people in different parts of the country. You have family and friends that are other places to keep up with what conversations are going on, because it's not, you know, small talk. I mean, of course, that's obvious that, you know, it's at different levels, but just, I think I had kind of become naive in Chicago, where every, you know, church has a flag on it, and then I, like, oh, well, I guess it isn't an ended conversation. And also, just, I think part of the reason that that could happen in Chicago partly because people could be open so that then you can have that personal contact. I mean, I am convinced that meeting parents, you know, blood relatives, or actual gays and lesbians is the way that it's going to change. I mean, that's how I've seen it over and over. But that's hard for me because I have friends, and I'm like, I want you to just come out, you know, so people respect you, and but I can't. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Again, Hyde Park is an exceptional community.
Right.
Yeah. Oh. Absolutely. And we all know what courage it takes to, you know, take the risk, because we don't know what parents are going to help to respond. We know too many bad stories. And that's why we punned on the Holden prayer and called this session coming out with good courage, because it takes a lot of good courage for many people to take the risk.
The other thing I was going to say is that then at Luther I did take a course that did kind of wrestle with some of these issues, and my problem with the religious right had been that I can't articulate biblical stuff quick enough. I mean, I know what it means here, but there is really good literature. We read Walter Wink, and it just was so helpful. I feel like I'm empowered now to talk to
him. Is that Dr. Fredrickson still up there?
Sorry. Yeah. Raleigh taught the class, so Raleigh.
He came down and spoke at our church, and he's very supportive.
And Terry Fredheim came into the class. Who I listened to him, and I'm like, how can anybody not be convinced? But he's on the ELC committee.
I have a gay son, and I live in San Francisco, and he just recently moved there. And of course, San Francisco is the perfect place to be. In that situation, but I have a hard time even listening to the wrestling that people are doing, because to me it seems so completely obvious that we should open our hearts with love, and so unchristian to do anything differently. And I admire the two of you going out and speaking, because my anger gets in my way.
It does in mine too. Yeah. I almost wrestled with an old man for the talking stick at an adult.
She follows you, huh, David? Yeah, right.
Both Allison and David were trying to take it away from me.
Yeah.
They said it was because they wanted to talk.
Oh, yeah.
They were just worried that I was submarining us.
You could use it as a club.
Yes.
A word of contrast. I appreciate what's been said, and I think that's probably true in many cases, but I can only say that in our particular situation, we didn't have the kind of input that many of you are speaking of. Instead, we just had to rely upon some videos that came from Lutherans Concerned, and although our congregation is not very diverse, they really respected what was presented there. So if you're from a congregation that's kind of maybe not doesn't have the opportunities that some of you have mentioned, there are still things available that will be very useful.
Boy, one thing you might do is write and thank them, because they probably don't realize that in your context that was
we did.
That was
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Well,
yeah.
I'm
blanking on the name of the Anita Hill documentary.
Disobedience.
I recommend it highly.
It's wonderful.
And we had the two women that had made the film come, and they were at the presentation at our church.
Yeah.
That I really recommend.
Yeah. Thank you. That's powerful. Yeah. One of the things we've recognized over the years is that many of the people who in congregations who resist moving on this are trying to be faithful to the Bible. You know, they have lived a whole life of trying to be faithful to the scriptures and what they hear from the pulpit. And you know, until recently, they haven't heard anything different or learned better how to read biblical texts. And you have to be careful not to hammer on them because they, you know, haven't changed immediately, because many are believing that the lifetime of thinking that they've done about it has been biblically faithful. And that's why it's so important for us as individuals and as teachers and pastors to help people understand that the faithfulness does not rest on reverses in Leviticus.
Invariably, it'll get around to, well, we're all sinners. And that more or less says that it's a sin.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel that it's a sin, that really ruffles my feathers when they come
back. That's right. Yeah.
To me, it's a real puzzlement. Can anybody help me understand how the church, with many, many fundamentalist thinking people and biblical literates, swallowed the change in marriage where we have so many divorces now?
Right.
How do we, embrace that without a whimper, hardly?
Yeah.
Where it's Jesus instead of Paul Sanders.
Right, yeah. And there's far more things you can quote as clobber passages in terms of divorce, and you're an adulterer if you're divorced and all that. And how do we just do that without a bump? And then we latch onto another issue that's very much smaller in terms of the biblical literature, and we're stuck on this. I just don't get that.
It's the complexity of human sexuality, I think,
right.
How skewed we are,
mm-hmm.
even about that in the broader culture, and the misinformation, and yes.
One of the things in our congregation, we've been working for about 10 years, you guys were there, and Kurt Chilstrom was there, and Anita Hill, and Anita, our partner. And we have one family who has a son who is gay who has been cured.
Who has what?
Cured.
Oh.
And he's married and he has a baby, and they're a family that has really, I mean, it gets very, very complicated because there's people that surround them with love and concern.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like if ever, now the father died. But it really makes it difficult, and we have and they work very hard on pulling every pastor we have into that issue. But one of the things we accomplished this year, and one thing is, and this is parents taking the risk again. Another family in the church, the parents left because they have two gay sons, and they were very visible, and they left. And that is due to putting a lot of pressure from the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very painful for them because
yeah.
they've been a partner of our community for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we have done is people kept saying, well, we don't have a problem with welcoming. The problem is marriage and the problem is ordination. So the congregation kind of called them on that. Said, okay, we're going to develop a welcome statement. And it really is a wonderful statement. I think it was based on the one that the ELCA puts out. But it said you. We welcome you. And then no matter
yeah.
if, and then at the end it says, if you have ever felt rejected by the church, it said you. And that's on every bulletin and every newsletter
yeah.
now.
But it's speaking to baptized members of the congregation, which is should be in us. That's what you're saying, isn't it? That's
well, and it's on the bulletin, so everyone who walks in, you hope they see that we will
yeah.
welcome you. We welcome you, no matter your sexual orientation.
Yeah.
See, we're back at that complexity of sexuality, and I wish we didn't have to label everybody. I mean,
yeah.
I wish I could be open enough so that there was a lot more opaque situation for all of us to be in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not have to be always having a label attached. I think, you know, maybe some people do, quote, get cured, but I think it's a comment on how unusual and complicated one particular people's sexual journey is, and how it can change, and how life comes at you with certain kinds of events and experiences that change, too.
Yeah.
I had the experience last year of living in Lansing, Michigan, and going to, I think, every single Lutheran church in town but one, and not feeling welcome in any of those churches. And walking with my partner, and it was fairly clear that the flares and such like that, that was not the place to be. And so I have gotten suspicious of statements that say all are welcome. It would be wonderful if we could say all are welcome, because all, we don't have to go down this long road of who all, who we actually mean by all. I love for that sexual orientation thing on there. I wish I didn't have to, but if it's not there,
we're kind of that way too.
I don't need to spend my time there.
I get stuck on words, you know, like when someone says lifestyle. Rather than orientation, you know.
Right.
They're more or less saying
my lifestyle's pretty normal.
Yeah. Maybe you're just watching too much TV. You know?
But I mean, lifestyle, when they say that word, I always think that they think it's a choice rather than an orientation.
Yeah, I'm sorry that that word lifestyle is getting to be part of common usage, and you know, too many of us all use it. But if one could just change it and just say, my life, it is my life, instead of lifestyle.
Which is better than orientation as well. Mm-hmm.
That is better, yeah. Just stop with that. Because
Well, when they argue that they can be changed, that really bothers me. You are born this way. You can't help what race you are. Mm-hmm. You accept that I have Down syndrome grandchild. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not like everybody else, but she's mine. And she can't help how she was born. Mm-hmm. They don't know what causes it. What makes us different even genetically like this? You know, I think that you should accept this. You cannot change what you are. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, I don't want to be black or I don't want to be white, mm-hmm. but I am. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think we need to look at this. And I get real mad at the government. You know, they make it this priority in the army. They don't want gay, lesbian people in it.
Right.
You know, and I think we'll talk about the heterosexuals and the behavior in the army, telling them to go have sex with anybody in the army. You get this in the video even this morning.
Yeah.
You know, expect it. I mean, that behavior just gets me.
Yeah.
And I think we need to accept that. I've had three invitations to ordination of gay people this year. One was, what was named here last year? Dan.
Spencer.
Thrilled pieces, and he's finally ordained, but not our church.
Yeah.
And then I've had another one, and one from out in New York, and he's been wanting to be a minister all his life. He became, he's been in wonderful work, and he's traveled all over the world. He's great music and therapy and help, goes to the homes, and he became an alcoholic. He also had a stroke. And he found in the addiction home, was finally where they accepted who he was. He said, I've never been able to be who I wanted to be. So he has now been ordained in New York, and his ministry is going to be with those who are in addiction, who've had this problem, and he'll be there. And he'll do a wonderful ministry with his music and drama. He's got all the talent to go with it. So I got a whole video of his ordination. And I'm just real thrilled to get affirmations from people who made it.
Yeah.
Well, our church does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what bothers me.
It does need
if any of you want this button that I'm wearing,
we've got
half a dozen more. It says ordained GLBT.
Good.
And you know, this is for some people. One of the issues in the church is, and it is for us, because our daughter would be a Lutheran pastor by now. She's a good one.
And so would the sappy girl.
Right.
She wanted me to be a pastor too.
Yeah. It hurts like mad to us as parents, a daughter who wanted to serve people in this way, and the church has shut the door in the face.
Student I had in junior high, his parents were my teachers. Doctorate teachers in California, he's retired now, he's another one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, has not been accepted his whole life, and I can't think of, it's certainly not his parents' fault, not his fault.
Yeah.
You know, but here he can't even go to his church he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And very brilliant. All the ones I know are brilliant. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they're professors.
Something Peter said a little while ago reminded me of Bible study, where one of our women in the congregation was talking about her brother who was gay and how he didn't have a place to be in small town Michigan, worshiping communities. And I remember Edith. Edith is probably about 8 years old. And Edith began to speak, and she said, you know, in my lifetime, I have been a woman who didn't have a vote in my church, in a church that now ordains women. I have been a member of this congregation who remembers a time where if there was a divorce, people quietly left the congregation, and now they're welcome. She said, I think it's moving too fast, but it's probably right. And I just remember this wonderful journey she was on, as we talked about the placement of gay and lesbian people within the body of Christ in our congregation. For her, a person of great faith and remarkable openness considering what she had known in life, she continued to have this sense that the Spirit was moving us to greater and greater openness. But for her, as opposed to the statement where you began today, it's moving too fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she's not sure, and she's not able to maybe take that next step.
Well, in our family, it's too late for our daughter,
right.
You know? So we're very much...
Maybe not.
Well, yeah, that's right. But, it doesn't look promising anyway. So she's made a different career choice. I think of Archbishop Desmond Tutu's statement. Talks about the fact that we baptize these lovely babies and later discover that they are gay or lesbian. But we take them into the church, declare them child of God, and then we do things and we behave in ways that make them feel like they are outsiders, that they are not as good as the rest. And Tutu says this must be the ultimate blasphemy. The ultimate blasphemy. It's a denial of their baptism and a denial of our baptism to behave like this. And that's something that I think we as congregations need to face.
I didn't know that quotation for a long time, but the image that would go through my mind as we came to understand Allison's sexuality and the church that had helped raise our children as much as we had. And I kept thinking of that baptism and confirmation, where the whole congregation stands up and says, I support you in your spiritual journey. And I thought, here Allison comes home to the congregation and talks about her journey. And I just wondered, in your mind, does everybody sit down? It was that literal for me. As a little girl, I see this standing, affirming congregation. And as a 21-year-old, I saw them sitting down. And that is just a hard image. And
yes.
We just had our third annual conference, Opening Doors Conference in Duluth. It has been a very good thing. It's been an ecumenical, many different churches involved. I don't know if you guys got to that. But they're really wonderful because it's a real mix of gay and straight people, but churches sharing dialogue about what's working and how are we doing it in our churches, and trying to do more openness. And I think they've just been wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Things are moving.
They are changing.
Whether we consider the speed slow or fast, but things are quite different from the way they were a decade or two ago.
And I think it's good to share between denominations, too, because of different places. The thing that we did, I can't say I recommend this, but we got kind of sick of fighting this all the time, or just that tension all the time, and we joined a UCC church where we've been ordaining women, openly gay people since 1970. And our pastor does holy unions, and they're listed right in with the weddings and in the annual report.
Yeah.
And it's just, we have at least two openly gay people on our council, and it's not an issue.
It's,
we don't have to talk about it. And it's so then you can move on
things.
And I'm not saying everything's perfect, because of course it isn't.
Sure.
You lose members every once in a while, or I'm sure there's. But it's just, it's good.
obligation to those members when they don't become reconciled with Christ.
Well, we gained many wonderful members because.
Well, it is really encouraging, though, getting a group of people together like this, because you hear about the personal journeys and you do hear about hope and the movement forward, and you get reminded that it's happening, and that's really a good thing.
Would it help if you send out blank sheets to members of the congregation and say, do you know anybody like this, either a friend or in your family? And you find out how much, many of them do.
How many,
They want to live hope. If you could do it, a piece of paper, you don't have to sign your name. Maybe you'd get a whole lot of support. You didn't realize it. I don't know how to begin.
I think I'm responding mostly because of what you said about feeling like you've given up for your daughter. But in 1976, I went to seminary. I graduated in 80 from the Episcopal Divinity School. So that's, 23 years ago now? And they didn't recommend me for ordination for a number of reasons. One, I was a woman. Two, I was disabled. They didn't know I was a lesbian. And because I was in the closet, but my friends say that I'm like a cat chewing on a rock, and so I'm going to be ordained, hopefully. I'm recommended in the UCC church, but I don't think that you, I'm just saying this is just because I have an opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you can say my daughter's not going to be ordained, because I mean, who knows when and where? I mean, she might be like Abraham, traveled for many years, Moses never saw the promised land, but he got us there.
Thanks for that.
So I just thought I'd throw that out. I kind of felt irritated for your daughter, quite frankly, when you said, it's all over for her. Well, it might not be all over for her.
Many people have said to Allison, why, you could be ordained in the UCC church. And she said, in my family, which is a long line of Lutherans, she said, how did she raise it?
She says, being Lutheran is not a matter of choice.
not just questions of family, My family has been, my grandfather was very proud to say that family was Lutheran since the Reformation. My family helped found the American Lutheran Church, the Ministry of Pennsylvania and other states, and we've been here for a long time. But it's not just that. I mean, I can't become UCC because I believe in the sacraments. And I can't become part of a church that as an entire church can't affirm the sacraments. And, that's not, there are other theological concerns of how we choose our churches.
There really are.
And that's what Allison means when she makes that statement.
We've been talking a lot about the kind of bottom-up theory here, congregation by congregation kind of thing. Over the years, I've wondered sometimes whether we ought to just take the fallout and go from the top down. I mean, I one of the hopeful things I had is that I think our church leadership at the highest levels, the Board of Church and Society, the ELCA, would have no trouble with any of this conversation in this room. And I know that, it's almost like the Civil Rights Act, Let's just do it and deal with the fallout. And I actually think that the top levels are too silent. They're too afraid. And I think if we had an educational process, scripturally based, I don't care what, filtering down from the highest levels of our church, from our seminaries, our best theologians, and filter that down to the pastors, hit the congregations, sure we're going to lose some people. But I think we get this done a lot quicker. And I think the people that we lost will be replaced by people that we gained.
But how do you bring those people along? That's what I'm really interested in. How, if this is in fact about proclaiming the gospel, which I think most people here would claim that it is, how do you proclaim the gospel there? I mean, it's not, the church is about doing what's right, but the church is also not about just doing what's right and letting the chips fall where they may, necessarily. I mean, if we believe in the baptism of those people, we need to be actively working. I mean, what does Paul say about when there's divisions in the church? You work for the active conversion of. And so, how do you do that? That's the question that I'm worried about, because this could very well mean the split of my family in some ways.
I respect what you're saying, and I think you're showing a sensitivity to people and their spiritual journey. But I have to disagree with you to this extent, that the world is bigger than the ELCA or any Lutheran body. And I think that if some people finally have to say, and I've had a very good friend who said this to my face, I'm sorry, I cannot tolerate this. My Christian conviction tells me this is not going to be allowed. Then that person finally has to make a choice about where that person wants to be. There's no reason why that person has to say, God is dead. That person still has all kinds of other choices, including, may I mention, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the Wisconsin Synod, and many other Protestant churches where they can go, they can worship, they can be very much involved in their spiritual journey. And
but
I feel
that's
as
not
if
what I'm saying. I'm not talking about the ELCA when I mean the church. I mean the church. Because if you say, oh, they can go somewhere else, that accepts denominationalism, which is anti-Lutheran to the extreme. I mean, denominationalism says that all churches are created equal, and it's okay that we're split, and that the churches aren't together, and that we act as if we're all little separate churches doing our own thing, but that's not what the gospel's about. Read John 17, for Pete's sakes. The church is not the church when it's split, and for us to act as if it's okay for the church to be split is denying the gospel more than my not being able to be ordained.
But what we said before about diversity means that we have to recognize that within the church there will always be diversity. And if people choose to be with like-minded people and that separates them from others, that is their choice.
It's their choice, but it's not one that the church should be able to accept laying down. And it's certainly not one which, especially being Americans who are caught up in this denominational system, which we can't just continue to accept, specifically as Lutherans, without continually saying, this is wrong, folks.
Well, I'm not a theologian, and I don't know really how dull on this, but I always think about the New Testament and all the parables and all the examples of the fact that whoever is being kept outside the greater society, that's the place where Jesus is. And to me, we've been brought up in those parables, and they have always meant the world to me in terms of example. And I think they are the example for the wider church. And we just need to, whether it's from the pulpit or whether it's from larger church bodies or in our Bible studies, that if we could keep coming at the issue from that angle, I think things would also change. But when you asked that question earlier, I guess that was the first thing that came to my mind. Just lean on the New Testament and lean on the parables and lean on the life of Christ and where he stood. And then we'll begin to get over it, I think.
We've got about 5 minutes left, and I think those who haven't been heard yet should have a chance. And Grace, I saw your hand, and then Stella.
Two, I think we have to look at what brings life. And if in fact Jesus came to bring life, I think that exclusion of anyone is not life-giving. Mm-hmm. When people put up barriers and say, no, I'm going to exclude these people, and if you won't honor that exclusion, then I leave. To me, that's a death-dealing blow, and I don't think we can change our action to honor that kind of death-dealing blow. I think we have to be on the side of life and invite them to join us.
Thanks. Dylan?
Out of curiosity, I'm just wondering what the real concern is when decisions are made based on whether a church loses members or not. Why
it's
would
money.
It matter?
Probably money.
So ultimately it just comes down to a business, but why does that matter? You know what I'm saying? Like, things can still move forward if we can always make things going forward, so it shouldn't even enter an equation, really. If something's built on the foundation of faith, then that's going to, the dollar bill's going to run that. It just boggles me.
In all fairness, there's more to it than money. I mean, there are concerns about people leaving. I mean, people, it's, I don't know, if the ELCA splits, which I'm not convinced it won't, I don't know what I'll do, because I know what I know to be true, but I also know where the greater majority of my family is, will be, and to be excommunicated from my family would be more than I can probably deal with.
What a great spiritual journey opportunity. It's a great opportunity. I mean, we're all here, individual souls, and you got to walk your path. And if that means you got to step out and face something highly ugly that scares the dickens out of you, then that's your grace opportunity.
Yeah, the church is inherently community-based.
Right, and you are not changing your church.
So the other thing that could surprise you is your family. I mean, that's what I have discovered over and over again. You know, as some of us operate with ageism, for instance. You know, don't tell the grandparents because they won't be able to handle it. And I've heard story after story after story that just simply isn't true. And I think families, we kind of think we know what they're going to react like, and we might be pretty close to right, but once in a while they surprise you.
Which reminds me of Peter's mom and dad. We were at the ceremony for his niece and her partner, and it was Heidi married into money. And so there's a lot of money, that huge party, and everyone's sitting around, many couples, gay couples there. And was it his mom who was sitting at the celebration table saying, "Well, I don't know why we're sitting around here talking about their sex life. We don't do that when we're with regular, they were around 75 years old. And they all thought, but someone asked about the Church of Minneapolis that Lutheran Church of Christ the Redeemer, and I've known many people in that church, and for years they have discussed, they've had gay, lesbian people in the community, in their church, sharing leadership, just part of the vital community there. And I would say that's one church where it's not an issue. It's a non-issue. They picked Mary Albing because she is who they wanted. We knew her when she was married to a guy. And they knew that she was the right one for their congregation. And so when the bishop refused to sign the letter of call, they said, "Well, that's okay, we're still doing it." And it was not based on the sexuality issue at all. So there are churches moving in positive.
And it is inspiring.
And then one more little thing. You asked me if gay pastors were being interviewed on that video, and when you asked me that, I was trying to run through my head who would be on the video. But Joel Workin, who came out, one of the first gay seminary students that came out in the seminary that he was, when he was denied ordination, he and Ruth Boston, Jeff Thompson, way back then, he was one of those three. And his parents, Joel and Ray Workin, are on the video sharing the story of
Betty
Joel.
Betty and Ray.
Yeah, Betty and Ray. Joel has died of AIDS, actually, since that time. But they're sharing the struggle that Joel had and the whole thing with the church. And they're rural North Dakota farm people. Mm-hmm. So it's another very powerful statement to the denial of somebody's marvelous gifts.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to be the bad guy and say that our hour has finished. Thank you all for coming and talking and listening and helping us get at good issues here and understanding. And a reminder that tomorrow morning at 9:00 is Holden Village's annual Gay Pride Parade. If you're so moved, I urge you to come either to march or to cheer on the sidelines. Karen and I will be carrying a banner for PFLAG, Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. If any of you would like to join us to march behind that banner, you're welcome to. And there will be other units of the parade with which you'll be welcome to march.
I sure am glad this problem is all fixed up.
Yeah. What time is the parade?
9:00. It's kind of an unusual.
So those of us who are leaving are going to have to pack.
Yeah, that's right.
Or tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.